This is the Motley Fool Radio Show with David Gardner. Google the name of our next guest, and you'll find that he's the co-founding editor of Wired Magazine and the founder of the Industry Standard. John Battelle is also the author of the new book, Search, How Google and Its Rivals Rewrote the Rules of Business and Transformed Our Culture. He joins us from KQED Studios in San Francisco, California. John Battelle, welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
John, we're going to focus primarily on Google today. So with that in mind, how did the company get started?
Well, it started as a research project, and I guess that's a pretty pedestrian start, but it started with really Larry Page and just a tiny bit later, Sergey Brin, both doctoral students at the Graduate School of Computer Science in Stanford.
And what year was that?
1995.
How important for Google, in your opinion, John Battelle, was just having that simple little search screen?
I think it was pretty much everything at the time, and you know, as you will, I'm sure, recall, as all of us were involved in that industry in the late 1990s, the business model was one of keeping people on your website by all means possible. And so for most places, that meant larding up the homepage with as many different options as one could conceive of, from horoscopes to email. And Google took the complete opposite contrarian point of view and just had a blank screen with a blinking cursor and a couple of words and a logo, and that was it.
What's the most surprising thing you learned about Google in doing your research for the book? I know, John, you've been watching Google for a long time as a businessman, but as an author, as you began to comb through, what surprised you?
You know, I expected, as I guess every journalist does, to find out something that was going to prove my initial consideration of the company wrong. I really did go in thinking that there was no way the relatively naive and, you know, insanely optimistic philosophy that the folks at Google carried, or at least purported to carry, was actually genuine. And the more people I talk to, you know, the more I realize that these guys are actually really smoking their own stuff. I mean, they really believe what they're saying. I talked to 40 or 50 people repeatedly at the company from all walks of life who'd been there since the founding, who just had joined. And it really was a consistent message that they joined not for the money, not even for the glory, but because they felt like they could change the world. And, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, makes one raise an eyebrow and be a bit suspicious. But in fact, I think there really is that sensibility at the company. Whether it can be retained now that we're, all of us, watching this company grow from being a, you know, insanely successful startup to a mature company, is going to be another chapter.
Google currently makes most of its money still off paid search. Do you think paid search, John, will continue to be Google's bread and butter for the near future, or is the big money coming from somewhere else?
For now, paid search is to Google what Windows is to Microsoft, a massive revenue stream that seems to be unlimited in its persistence. But as we've seen with Microsoft over the years, and I think as we're starting to see with Google, there are new lines of revenue that are going to be developed, applications that are built on top of the operating system, so to speak. And so advertising revenue, even advertising revenue that is quite unique because the paid search model is almost diametrically opposed to the content-based advertising model that we're all familiar with in media. It has its limits, and the wonderful thing about Google is they have such an extraordinary infrastructure and so many talented engineers that if you can imagine it might be done, it's possible that it could be done within the company. And so that has led to an awful lot of speculation that the company might get into the same business as eBay or Amazon, for example, or the company might become a phone company, which with the voice over IP application it launched about 3 weeks ago, it essentially is, although it's not charging for it.
Let's talk some more about that. Whom or what does Google regard as its primary competitor?
I think because search has become the navigational framework for the majority of consumers and readers and audience folks on the internet, owning and defending the search turf is where the competition is the most fierce. So if you look at that, you can see really straight in the crosshairs of Google is Yahoo, which has made probably the most significant turn toward being a search competitor in the past few years. And then right after that is Microsoft, which pretty much rented all of its search capabilities up until about a year and a half ago when it started deploying its own native search capabilities. It still is renting the back end of paid search from Yahoo, but is working diligently on building its own paid search network. So those two, Microsoft and Yahoo, mm-hmm. are really the biggest competitors right now to Google. But there are plenty of upstarts that would like to share a little bit of that as well.
John, can you make a prediction about how Google will look different in whatever way 1 year from today?
I think 1 year from today, Google will continue what it's working on diligently right now, which is trying to know more about you. About you, the user of Google services. Initially, Google knew very little about the person using their service. They knew a lot about the aggregate people using their service, right? They could watch the back end of the queries and the results and the paths taken and learn a lot about what people liked, where they went, and so on, and tailor their services accordingly. But they didn't know anything about the person individually. And they are starting to change that by rolling out a whole suite of services from Google Desktop and Sidebar to Mail and Google Talk that are requiring registration and allowing Google to know much more about who you are. And the main reason for this, although it might seem a bit terrifying on the, sort of Orwellian side, is really so that they can provide better services. The more they know about you, the better they can search based on your personal choices, and the better the service they can provide to you.
John, you write that search technology may lead to, quote, the creation of HAL, the intelligent but creepy computer doppelganger in 2001 A Space Odyssey, end quote. Explain.
One of the holy grails of computer science, and you know, if you're going to make your life computer science, just as if you made your life Major League Baseball, your holy grail would be to beat Hank Aaron's record, to pitch a perfect game. Mm-hmm. In computer science, the holy grail is to create a computer that is intelligent, that seems as you interact with it to be a human being. And this has been the dream of many computer scientists over the years and the failed dream of the artificial intelligence community in the 1980s and 90s. And I spoke with many scientists who see in search the potential for the creation of artificial intelligence. And the reason is that when language is our most sophisticated and complicated execution of human intelligence. And language is the core base, in terms of words, is the code of search. And the more you have search results and knowledge from where people go and what kinds of phrases relate to what other kinds of phrases, which is exactly what happens with search, the more you can ascertain potentially natural language translation, which is machine translation. Machine translation is at the core of research being done furiously at every major search company right now, from Yahoo to Microsoft to Google, as well as every major technology company like HP, NEC, and IBM. That is a very important piece of the building block, if you will, of artificial intelligence, is the ability to have a conversation as we're having with a computer. And it's almost every person that I spoke to who's a scientist at any search company that I interviewed said that their real goal was to have a computer like Star Trek's, where you can speak with it and it asks and it answers you with an appropriate answer. Sometimes the appropriate answer is, it's best if you go talk to someone else, right? That's mm-hmm. often the intelligent answer. It's not always that they have the perfect data, but rather they know where to get it.
Just so long as they don't have that creepy HAL voice.
Right, and creepy HAL approach to life and death.
John, final question for you. I know you're not an investment advisor, but to the extent that you are a business observer, and I'm betting something of an investor yourself, do you think Google will beat the market from here over the next 5 years? Market cap's just over $80 billion right now. If you had to say yes or no.
I would have to say yes, and I am not an investor other than I hold mutual funds and I have a sort of a blind investment because as a journalist I try not to to handle any stocks personally, but I would have to say given the assets that the company has, And given what is occurring in the world of technology, media, marketing, they are very well positioned. My only concern would be, and this is where my analysis would break down, mm-hmm. is the market has priced an awful lot of that into the stock right now. The question for 5 years from now is whether 5 years from then, mm-hmm. it still feels like there's as much opportunity. And I would argue that we're really in the beginning of this, not nearly in the middle or the end.
Mm. The book is Search, How Google and Its Rivals Rewrote the Rules of Business and Transformed Our Culture. John Battelle, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Still searching. Still searching.